here it is, probably the most famous phrase in all of Tzitzis. It's probably hard to imagine a phrase more famous than this. Chelek Eloka Mima'al Mamish. Not that God created you, and not only did he create you in his image, when he created the world at large, he spoke. Yehi Or, Yehi Mayim, Yekabu Amayim, Yehi Choshech. Tera'ah Hayabasha, 10 speeches created our world, 10 verbalizations. We're studying Amira. Ba'asara Ma'amaras, Nivra Ha'olam. But when he created man, Vayipach Bi'apav Nishmas Chayim. When I'm speaking, I'm thrusting air through my larynx. But when I breathe, my diaphragm is rising, and there's more of my gut being expressed. Don't worry, I brushed my teeth today, but there's a deeper imbuing than when I just happened to speak with you. So God breathed into man, Vayipach, again, it's a general pasuk about humanity at large, but he's focusing on Jews. Vayipach bi'apav nishmas chayim. And he quotes the Zohar, source number 1, line 2, Kama Shakasav the Zohar, Man de Nafach, a person who breathes, Mitoche Nafach, breathes from his essence. Vayipach bi'apav, Man de Nafach, Mitoche Nafach. And in one fell swoop, this line solves both issues which Chassidus is trying to target. Number one, it's a dark and dank historical process, but you have part of Hashem in you. You're not created by Hashem. You're not possessing similarities to Hashem. Those can fray with the passage of time, and you're lost in history. Part of you is Hashem. And history can't change that. Wherever you are, Hashem is. Internally. And later Chassidus, we even have this starting to play games of freedom of choice. Well, if Hashem permeates every part of me, then maybe I don't even have choice, because it's permeating my heart and the decision-making process. So this is a launching pad for some potentially very provocative ideas, not in Chabad, but in others. So it doesn't make a difference where I am or how long man de nafach mi delay. Hashem is in me. And it also establishes, in my language, the doctrine of the inalienability of a Jew, that no matter how far a Jew falls, no matter how errant his behavior becomes, no matter how deviant, you still have a part of God in you. That probably rings with a little familiarity. Those are the common phrases, and they become so common people don't know what they mean anymore. But no matter where you are, how far you've fallen, you still have nefesh eloka mima'al mamish. The image of a diamond that falls into the sand, it's just covered with sand. If you dust off the sand, you'll see the luster. Now, what's interesting about this is this becomes one of the anthems of Chassidus in general. And Chassidus, across the span, is a very, very embracing and inclusive experience. Even through the challenges of the 19th century and the mass defections of conservative and reform, the Levi Yitzchak of Berditcher becomes the 19th century incarnation of justifying the righteousness of every Jew and loving every Jew, and the Svarim called Orev Yisrael. You don't recognize this in Chassidus. Modern Chassidus is a contraction of what Chassidus normally was. Basically, these two traumatic events called the Holocaust and the State of Israel threw Chassidus into a tizzy. And Chassidus, by and large, has retracted, especially the Holocaust, because the Holocaust devastated Chassidus. Devastated. As much as Litvak suffered in the Holocaust, they eviscerated Chassidus. The entire branches of Chassidus that were wiped off of the map, because that was ground zero. Romania, Poland, Hungary, was right at the core. Ashkenazim lived in England, lived in France, lived closer in Russia. Again, who suffered as well? Germany, obviously, the Yekis. But ground zero of the Holocaust was Poland, Romania, and Hungary. And they ripped it apart. And then, of course, the State of Israel. So essentially, Chassidus today is in retreat, except for Lubavitch. Lubavitch is that glimmer of what Chassidus used to be. By embracing every Jew, no questions asked, no judgments about, because you all have that divine essence in you. Okay? So this becomes an anthem of Chassidus, Nefesh Eloka Mimal Mamish. It creates that intimacy. Again, I'm obviously simplifying these on large tracks of how that intimacy unfolds, but it takes in 2 chapters to create that powerful, powerful statement. The second one, maybe we'll just read 2 today. Why is it even called Chabad? Well, some of us know Chachma, Bina, and Das. 3 different forms of cognitive processing. And again, those 3 different forms of cognitive processing reflect 3 different channels by which God's knowledge can cascade its way down from the infinity. So there's nothing, it's not just psychoanalysis, it's psychoanalysis corresponding to cosmology. That'd be the best way to phrase it. Psychoanalysis paralleling cosmology. How do I view the cosmos? How do I view myself? In Chabad, it's the same. So that's why, and again, Hasidus is not normally associated with cognition. We normally create an antithesis. Hasidus is experientialism, drinking. We're the thinkers, they're the partiers and the revelers. Chabad is a highly, highly intellectual form of Hasidus, in part because of the Sefer, in part because of history, because it takes root near Vilna, right, in the backyard of the Vilna Gaon. So you're not going to succeed in Vilna unless you're studying Torah. And during the first few generations, many Hasidim did not study that much Torah. It took a while for there to be a softening and an emulsification of Hasidus, and they started to learn Torah on the same level as their non-Hasidic brothers. But Lubavitch was always some of the greatest halachic work of the period are works of Lubavitch. So Lubavitch and Rebbeim were always the top flight Hasidim. By the way, even to this day, the biggest mistake you could make, you could have met a real Lubavitcher. Not to say that the Chabads in New Guinea and India are not real Lubavitch, but a person who's Lubavitch inherently and not out for fear of living their life without Lubavitch, if you call them a Haredi, they'll laugh at you. And they'll take you into their library and show you all the books they've read that you haven't read about life. And then you'll sit at their table and you'll see the way they treat their wives and the elegance of their dinner table, and you'll feel the pauper in the presence of the prince. Trust me, you have to get to know these people and appreciate it's not a Haredi lifestyle. It's more or less supportive of the state of Israel. It's extremely open to the world around them, not just the Jewish world, but the broader world. If you ever get a chance, real Lubavitcher people, they happen to be incredible people. And ironically, the Rebbe profile makes sense. It works for them. In every house you go in, there's this huge picture of the Rebbe across the mantle. We look at it as hero worship, but it works. It's not hero worship, it's just, it creates presence. I know what presence is in my life. I live with those two people that sat up front that I saw for 32 years. I don't have years. I have pictures on my wall. I don't think that I wouldn't call myself a hero worshiper. I haven't subjected my own independence because I live so deeply with my Rebbe. It just is a different form of religious processing. So let's see what Chachma is, what Bina is, and what Das is. Okay? Source number two. Hasechel, intellect. Kolel, Chachma, Bina, Vadas. Chabad, Chachma, Bina, Vadas. What is Chachma? Chachma, I would call the first intellectual flash. When you first uncover an idea, that first inquiry, when something hits you, you realize you're engaged with something. Chachma, he calls, let's read his language. Line number three. Kol davar nikra b'shem chachma. And again, there's a lot of wordplay in Kabbalah. Chachma can be manipulated to read koach ma, the ability to inquire. Koach ma. Chachma is koach ma, the ability. It's that first inquiry, that first encounter with an idea. But we know we're dealing with ideas, not just Eleanor Roosevelt. Small minds speak about people. Average minds speak about events. Large minds speak about ideas. So we know we're encountering an idea, and it's not a person, it's not an event, it's something larger. It's a concept, it's an idea, it's a value. Kochma. The next stage is what we would call understanding, processing. When you take the first flash of encounter and you process it, shemisbonin b'sichla, you consider it intellectually, l'havin davar li'ishur li'amko, to understand it deeply. That's called Bina. So if we've covered Chachma and Bina and we already understand something, what is Das? What's that third level? Das, I'll translate it in English, and then we'll see how he terms it, is deep visceral assimilation. There are certain things we know, and there's certain things that become so deeply assimilated within our conscience and our subconscious, our identity. What aspect? It may be trivial, maybe sports, maybe what things really are. They tend to come out in our dreams. They tend to shape and index. Oh, I remember where I was when I heard that song 20 years ago. Rather than information that lies at the surface, it skims the surface. We know we can recall them, but they're not part of our identity. The Adam yada es chava. Adam didn't know chava intellectually. He had a sexual encounter with chava. They bonded at a level that was visceral and existential. That's das. So let's read das. V'hadas, the bold part. Engagement, integration, Shemekasher Daito, you integrate your knowledge, Bekesher Amitzvah Chazak Meod, in a robust, unbreakable fashion, Bitakam Machshavto, and your mind is engaged, Bechozek, robustly, Begadlus Ein Sof, in Hashem's infinity, the Eino Mesiach Daito, and you don't let go from that engagement. It's a deeper level of understanding Hashem's will. Chachma, koachma, das, processing. I'm sorry, chachma, koachma, bina, processing, das, even deeper than assimilation. I would say submersion within your identity becomes part of your core. And of course, that's how we translate, we hope to translate Talmud Torah into a spiritual moment. So how do we really turn Talmud Torah into a spiritual pursuit rather than intellectual pursuit? By somehow allowing it to cascade deeper than our minds and deeper than it becomes part of us, and this matters to us. And if we care about what Rashi said, or we care about what the Rashba said, it becomes the pursuit of the word of Hashem, not just some six-day seminar thinking about a mirror and tradition. These are just two sections. It continues to deconstruct human identity, different traits of human experience, thought, speech, activity, machshava, dibur, maisa. And that second part highlights how intellectual Chabad Chassidus is. You don't feel like you're learning Chassidus. You feel like you're learning analysis of self overlaid with a cosmological kind of knowledge. Okay, this is a really important sefer. It's a little difficult to read if you're not familiar with the terms. It's not like opening a sign book. To have some familiarity with the terms. Not all people who understand the terms are also able to convey it in a cogent fashion, so sometimes there's a bit of an either you're internal but you don't have the vocabulary to convey it to a modern audience, or you're part of the modern world but you're looking at it from the outside, you may not understand the terms, or some people have successfully conveyed it. But it's a real good intro into the world of Chassidus, and in particular Chabad Chassidus, because of its intellectual thing. Okay?
I've heard it's extremely
high level. Yes.
So the point is to strive for
this personality. Very high level. And by the way, to a degree, that same view of the two worlds of the Mesilas Yesharim, the war of the worlds, and the black and white binary nature of our world, I think is very, very powerful in him as well. It's more sophisticated and more subtle because you're dealing with sub-constituent elements of human identity, but there's still a sense of a war. And that's why I think you have to adopt it or filter it when you read it, because it's not the way we live our lives. And that's why I think it gets some of that sense in Bainoni, because as Nathan's saying, his level of Bainoni is so surpassing. Basically, you've performed every mitzvah and every avera, and you're working on very, very subtle issues of internal attitude adjustments and things that, for most of us, are still very elusive and very distant. Okay, let us set the table for today's discussion of Amira, power of speech. The world was created through speech, and we create our marriages through speech, and let's see what role this speech plays. So yesterday we saw some basic introductions. We saw a speechless Kiddushin, a Kiddushin without any Amira, the Sivlonos. We explored Asukin Ba'osinyan, contextual Kiddushin. We saw the possibility of redundant speech, that the Shtar already contains the information. And the question we crystallized was, what is the role of speech? Is it merely to convey and to disclose intent? After all, it may just be gifting the woman rather than marrying her. Or it's part of the formal process of Maisekicha, of Kikach Eshisha. Perhaps it's part of the formal process because the package that Kiddushin represents, it's a multi-layered package, requires a multi-faceted trigger point. If Kiddushin is more than just an acquisition, but it contains Ishus and a Misa, then there have to be several activities that are formal elements of this ceremony, rather than just the money being, let's focus on the money without the Via and the Shtar. Let's say I marry a woman with money. The money is the Kiddushin, and the Amira is just telling her I want to marry her. The Amira may be part of what we call the Maisa Kiddushin. Today we're going to study an interesting case called Nasan Hu V'Amrahi. What happens if she speaks? What happens if he delivers the money and she speaks? And assuming, because we always like to fix all other variables, so we can focus on the one variable for discussion. Let's assume her grammar is proper. Namely, she speaks in a way that indicates that he's acquiring her. Because she could also speak in a way that suggests that she's acquiring him, and that would be a more structurally flawed condition, because you can't acquire a man has to acquire a woman. So let's say she says, Hare ani miskadesh eslecha. So the grammar is fine, and the process hasn't been tainted by her speech, namely the acquisition vector is still appropriate, he's acquiring her. What could possibly be wrong if she does the talking? After all, here's the premise. We know what their intent is. Why does the Gemara consider that it may not work? And we'll see different opinions helping us break that down, and we may be at the aha moment that, oh, this Gemara may clearly indicate that Amira is not just identifying intent, but there's something more. Okay? I have a couple. I saw that yesterday some people had a quicker run through the Makaras. I've got a couple of Makaras in my back pocket. So in the bullpen, anyone who finishes, come my way. Okay? So we'll meet again at 12. Okay? I'm just going to excuse myself rather briefly because I've got these 20 guys with guns and they don't have guns. I'm all scared, but if I don't come back, then I think Chaim will give cheer today. If I don't.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome. You sent it out?
I took the two of the true dog and hope they spread it.